evidence that disproved the parental discipline defense in light of this court's decision last year in State versus Martha Pollack. Now, very briefly, in this case, Alfred J. Roman, the defendant, Alfred did everything correctly. When he resorted to physical discipline, it was as a last resort. This case is not about shredding lettuce and grating cheese. Very briefly, as the record shows, over the course of years, Alfred tried to correct the behavior of the complaining witness, Joseph Powell. Correct is disrespectful, is defiant, and his violent behavior. And it was only as a last resort that he resorted to physical discipline. Now, the other three issues are intertwined and the result of the Intermediate Court of Appeals, the ICA's grave errors. And they are, first, holding that the structural errors of the family court were amenable to harmless error analysis. The structural errors of the family court's denial of Alfred's right to a fair trial, his right to present a full defense, and also of obviating the state's burden of having to prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, second of all, the ICA compounded this error by using a sufficiency analysis and under the guise of harmless error. And third, which is really intertwined with the first two, the ICA, the family court's systematic exclusion of the defense evidence in this case, and really the quashing of the defense, the only defense in this case, leaves us to speculate as to what the defense evidence would have been. The trial court, the family court, threw out the defense and its evidence as a matter of law, and it's not only harmful, it's harmful per se as a structural error. Now, structural errors, they're really errors that make a trial, a criminal trial, fundamentally unfair. And as the U.S. Supreme Court and this court as well has shown, has given examples, for example, the right of not having counsel. I believe in the United States Supreme Court case, United States versus Gonzalez. Gonzalez-Lopez, the right to have a counsel of one's choice, the right not to exclude grand jurors on the basis of race, the right to have a public trial, and certainly the right, the Sixth Amendment right to be able to present a defense and have a fair trial. And as cited in our petition, our application for a writ, in United States versus Miguel, a Ninth Circuit case, the absolute shutting down of a defense is structural error, as the Ninth Circuit held in that case. Now, one of the things that characterizes structural error is that these type of errors defy harmless beyond a reasonable doubt analyses. One is left to speculate as to what might have been. So in this case, one's left to speculate what would the defense evidence have been, what would have been shown, what would have been testified to, and that is why, in this case certainly, that the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt analysis is inapplicable. We simply can't assess how the case would have been affected had the defense been allowed to present its case. The judge systematically shut down the defense, and it's shown that the judge from the beginning, the family court judge from the beginning of this case, had already determined that the parental discipline defense did not apply. And that's shown by the fact that the judge in this case systematically from the beginning did not allow the defense to present evidence of prior discipline of the child, prior non-physical discipline of the child. From cross-examination of Joseph Powell, I believe on pages 18 and 21 of the transcript, the judge shut down that cross-examination.
Well, the judge just determined that there was nothing to discipline.
Excuse me?
There was nothing to discipline the minor about.
Well, that, as I pointed out in my opening brief that I wrote some time ago, that in itself is error. I believe the judge...
In effect, Mr. Ting, didn't the judge rule that non-conduct, well, that his take on the complainant's behavior was that it consisted at most of defiance, and defiance as a matter of law could not trigger the parental discipline defense.
I believe that was part of his holding, part of his findings, conclusions, and that's blatantly wrong in light of State versus Stocker. In State versus Stocker, if the court recalls, that involved the father called his child to come over, and in the face of that, the child was defiant and didn't come over. I believe it was only his 11-year-old son, and this court found that is worthy of discipline, that parental discipline applied in that case, that a mild slap to the face of that child did trigger the parental discipline defense, and so non-action. And I think the court's holding really defies common sense in terms of anyone who's ever been a parent. A child not responding, a child not listening, a child's defiance in itself, as in some people's judgment, requires physical discipline. And so it not only contradicts State versus Stocker, it really contradicts common sense of anyone who's been a parent. And so
the cases with respect to defiance or disrespect talk in terms of or involve factual circumstances involving slapping. In this case, there was kicking in addition to that. And the kick was for the failure to shred cheese correctly or appropriately or not at all. I'm not clear from the record. But what's your response to that? This is something more than a slap.
Well, I think it needs to be broken down between the alleged kick and the slap. And as you've broken it down, the slap, and as the trial court itself broke it down, the slap itself was with respect to the taking the slap first. The slap itself with respect to the defiance when the child stood up with his fists clenched and then took a step as it seemed to Mr. Roman that he was
going to fight. Point of time, that happened second, right?
That happened secondly, correct. Now, going back to your question with regard to the kick, I think it's really that the state's talking points, this is about shredding lettuce and grating cheese. This is not merely about that case. As the record shows in the transcript, this has been going on. Joseph's defiance has been going on for years. And defendant Alfred, he took steps to correct that. Joseph has a behavioral problem, he has a violence problem, and what was shut down. And again, we're left to speculate as to what would have been shown. He was shut down to showing what non-physical discipline actions that he took. But one thing that was clear is that Alfred took Joseph to counseling. He took Joseph to counseling for his violence. He took Joseph to counseling for his behavior. And although the doctor was not allowed to testify, the counseling part, it was recognized by the judge and is in the record. And so this was a culmination of things. And it's a culmination of not just not listening and being disrespectful. One of the things that happened when Alfred came home is that he called to Joseph and he asked to ask him, why haven't you done what I asked you to do? So it's, and then Joseph basically ignored him. And we know that Joseph heard him because from Joseph's own testimony, he heard Alfred he testified that Alfred came home and was in a little bit of a rant.
Since Justice Acoba raised a distinction between a slap and a kick, what is the state of the record with respect to the nature of the kick?
Well, the family court itself found there to be one kick. Although I recognize that the complainant testified there were two, the court itself, if we read the findings, found that there was a kick. There was one kick, and in and of itself,
the defendant's characterization of the kick was kick him in the ocole.
Correct.
And did the complainant testify regarding the kick?
I believe the complainant testified as to two kicks, Mr. Justice.
And how did he characterize the kicks?
Well, I'm not sure in terms of, just with respect to the injury, he testified that it felt a little bit sore. And there's nothing in the record as to the duration. That's all we have, that it was a little bit sore. As well as with respect to the slap, that felt a little bit sore, and there was a small lump, and there was some redness.
Any evidence in the record of injury resulting from the kick other than the complainant's testimony that for some period of time it felt a little sore?
To my knowledge, there's no other testimony of injury with respect to the kick. And so it's of some unknown duration. And frankly, we're not arguing the facts here, but it's probably as Alfred had testified. Joseph Powell's lying there. He's watching TV. He's got his Walkman on. Alfred comes and asks him, why haven't you done what I asked you to do? To get his attention, and even the trial court found that it was to get his attention, he came up and he nudged him in the Okole. And that's basically what it was. He did not, as the state in its answering brief, did not come up and take a full swing. Joseph testified he didn't see exactly the kick because his back was to it. Certainly, it's not just the kick, but it's not just what was done, but the degree of force used. As the court wrote in State versus Montevallo, it's not merely what was being used, but the degree of force that's being used as well. And in this case, the degree of force was proportional. So whether it was a kick or a tap, at most we have a little bit of soreness to Joseph in his lower back.
Mr. Ching, don't you need the failure of the child to respond to the request of great cheese or whatever to justify parental discipline? I mean, if you're going to rely on things that happened in the past or months, he just can't come home and kick the kid. I mean, there has to be some sort of
catalyst
reason for the infliction of parental discipline. So don't you need the failure to grate the cheese?
And I believe there was a failure of that, at least at what the trial court found. Now, there's conflict in testimony from Joseph and Alfred as to what was done and what wasn't done, but the trial court settled that. The trial court found that Joseph didn't do what he was told to do. And
well,
so
he grated the cheese, but he didn't do it the way Roman wanted him to do it, from Roman's testimony.
I believe that was from Joseph's testimony.
According to Roman, he just didn't do it at all.
Correct. Okay. So there's conflict in testimony as to what Joseph did or didn't do. But the trial court didn't break it down and specifically what was done and what wasn't done, but the trial court did find that Joseph didn't do. The trial court's holding, its finding, was that Joseph didn't do what he was asked to do.
You spoke to the issue concerning the exclusion of non-physical discipline evidence, right?
Yes.
Apparently there were incidents where he tried to discipline the minor, but without physical efforts.
Well, that's the only thing that's in the record is his attempts, is his taking him to the therapist, to the psychologist. So that's what's in the record, and that's really part of the problem, that we're left to speculate as to what else he had done. And indeed, perhaps he grounded him, perhaps he took away his privileges.
Any offer of proof in that regard in the record?
I believe there's no offer of proof as to the specifics in terms of what was done in the past, but certainly the record shows that they were attempting to introduce that evidence. I believe towards the beginning of Mr. Roman's testimony, the public defender at trial asked Mr. Roman, what do you mean by discipline, trying to elicit that he had, and it's clear that he was trying to elicit that he had disciplined in a non-corporal sense Joseph in the past, and that was shut down by the trial court. And so there's nothing in the transcript to say that he did X, A, B, and C, except for the taking him to therapy, taking him to a psychologist. But I agree, there is nothing in terms of I grounded him, I took away his privileges, or things of that nature. But again, we're left, because that was shut down, and that's clear it was shut down by the family court, we're left to speculate.
So on this day, he was drinking. The woman had been drinking.
Yes, by Mr. Roman's own admissions, he had been drinking earlier in the day. However, the trial court's findings didn't involve that. The trial court did not find that Mr. Roman was intoxicated, did not find that he was under the influence at the time. The trial court seemed to have sided with Mr. Roman that he was drinking earlier in the day, and that there's no finding that it had affected him during the period of time.
No effect at all? I ask you that because part of his sentence was to seek treatment.
That's right. And during the sentencing portion, as an aside, it really was, I'm not sure, it's probably incorrect to characterize it as an afterthought, but I believe the judge found that alcohol was involved, and so he did sentence him to that. But with regard to his earlier findings, when he was determining the facts of what happened, there's no mention of that.
You referred to structural error. And you know, I have no problems with structural error, but is that the standard that this court applies?
Well, this court has... I believe this court has itself used the term structural error in the past, in terms of, for example, not having a public trial. And I don't remember the case. In the specific case, the court decided that there was sufficient publicity, but this court itself has used that term, structural error, in terms of being unable. And really, getting back, it's really being unable to analyze it under the harmless error analysis, just because we have to speculate so much as to what would have happened.
Well, this court applies the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard, doesn't it?
It does.
And doesn't really apply the structural categories that have been adopted by the U.S. Supreme Court.
I'm not sure I understand your question, Justice Okoba. You're saying that the court, your proposition...
I'm saying that the U.S. Supreme Court attacks these problems differently. They have adopted structural error versus non-structural error, and they have categorized types of errors, whereas this court has not adopted that approach, but simply applied a general standard of harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, I think... It's my recollection that this court has used that language. It's not often, and even the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, I will just mention this because as an ICA judge, I use the structural error analysis applied by the U.S. Supreme Court and was reversed by the Hawaii Supreme Court, saying we don't use structural error; we use harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't think that has changed.
Is it State versus Suka?
Suka, yeah.
In which you wrote, I think the Westlaw, the red flag needs to have an asterisk next to that. I'm not sure it was actually reversed because it was.
Well, that part was.
It was really. It was,
I remember
it. Was really,
it
I think. I think Holbron. I think what Holbron really clarified was the dicta in Suka.
I like the idea. It was dicta. Sorry, go ahead.
So I, you know, State versus Suka did try to break out that there are different categories of errors, and I believe what was clarified in Holbron subsequently is that there's no harmless there's no such thing as a lower standard of harmless. There's only harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And so that is what was clarified, not so much reversed, because Suka did apply the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard in terms of coming to its decision. So, in my opinion, you were not reversed, Justice Okoba. The structural error in this case that doesn't apply. I mean, it certainly applies to the court. Family court shutting down the defense, preventing Alfred from presenting his defense, preventing him from having a fair hearing. It also presents a structural error because it basically took away an element. It took away an element that the state had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's to disprove beyond a reasonable doubt the parental discipline defense from the defendant. And it's this argument is more of a logical, more of a logic one, in that if you look at if you look at Sullivan versus Louisiana, the United States Supreme Court case, the logic of that is that because an element was taken away by the there is in fact no valid judgment. The judgment itself is a nullity because in fact there was no finding of beyond a reasonable doubt because an element was not considered. And because of that, there is no object to analyze beyond for harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. There's no object because there is in, there was in fact no valid guilty verdict in this case. And so with for that reason as well, there was a structural error. And even I could be corrected. It's my understanding that in Hawaii, the a structural error is coerced confessions. I believe in State versus Bowe, is it Bowie, B-O-W-E, and that's the case with the basketball coach where he elicited statements from his player. In that case, and cases subsequently citing that case, has found that that coerced confession is fundamental. With using a coerced confession is fundamentally unfair, and it also shows that this that Hawaii, as we all know, this court interprets the Hawaii Constitution freely, and it can interpret it broader than the United States Constitution. And that's just in comparing that to Arizona versus Fulminante, where the Supreme Court did not find coerced confession to be. In the divided court, found that coerced confession was not structural error.
In order to avoid any possible white noise that may be going on at the moment, would it be fair to characterize your position as this? If it was error for the trial court to rule the parental discipline defense inapplicable as a matter of law, that error could not be harmless.
That is correct. That that would be a correct statement of our position. In disallowing, and certainly in this case, in that there was no other defense proffered. And in most parental discipline case, there's no denying the acts taken by the parent. And if one looks at the court's findings on page 79 through 81 of the transcripts, it's clear that within a span basically of a few sentences, the court concluded parental discipline doesn't apply. The next sentence, Alfred admitted to doing it. Next sentence, therefore he must be guilty. There's no other the whole defense was thrown out. And which really takes us into the ICA, the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt analysis, in that the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt is really how did this error affect the verdict? How did it affect the decision? And clearly, in that span, in basically a handful of sentences, by throwing out the defense, one necessarily comes to the guilty verdict, comes to the conviction, because there's no other defense.
Let me ask you this. One of your defenses was self-defense, correct?
I believe that it was raised. I'm not sure that it was actually argued, but certainly that there was hint. There was hints that there was hints.
This was
as
a result of clenching his fist and.
Correct.
Is there any evidence as to the relative size of Roman and the minor?
There is no. I don't recall any testimony as to the relevant as to the relative sizes of the two. What I do know is that the judge, Joseph Powell, the complainant, was 17 years old at the time. The judge himself said, for what it's worth, found, you know, I won't call him a child. I can only assume given his size and age as well. So to answer your question, there's nothing that I recall in terms of their actual size in the record. And so, So with respect to the structural error as well as the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, even if this court finds that there is no structural error analysis here in the state of Hawaii, assuming the court does not agree with that argument, this case is clearly not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Again, because of the shutting down of the defense, we're left to speculate as to what would have been offered. What we do know is that from the trial court's own analysis, because it was thrown out, we necessarily have a guilty verdict in this case. So we're asking that the court, with regard to the sufficiency, we're asking that the court reverse the ICA as well as the trial court and find that the state has not proven, disproven beyond a reasonable doubt, the parental discipline defense. In the alternative, we're asking that the court reverse and remand this case for a new trial and to allow Alfred to present a proper defense.
Is there an issue of double jeopardy here?
I believe if the court finds that there was there was insufficient evidence, I believe that this case must be dismissed with prejudice. The state had a shot. So even with the exclusion of all the evidence, I believe the state still hadn't proven disproven parental defense beyond a reasonable doubt. And so the state doesn't get another crack at it if that is the basis for the court's holding. If the basis is that there is structural error.
On that subject, as I recall, the minor, the complainant's version of the events was that he was struck because Mr. Roman was not satisfied with the manner in which he was grating the cheese, and if he got to it, cutting the lettuce. If a trier of fact were to believe that version, would there be substantial evidence supporting a conviction?
I believe even if that was to be believed. Given what Joseph testified to, that he did not respond initially to the request, and it was only on the second time that, if we were to take Joseph's testimony, and that it was only the second time, and Alfred didn't like how he was doing what was requested of him, given the proportional nature of the physical discipline, as well as the injury involved, and given his age, Joseph's age, I think that there is still, it would still be insufficient. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Marianne Holliker, and I am the Deputy Prosecuting Attorney representing the County and State of Hawaii. Your Honors, the issue before this court is, in fact, a parental discipline defense. And this case is about grating cheese and shredding lettuce. It is about...
Excuse me, Ms. Holliker, for purposes of our review, per the cert application, are you taking issue with the ICA's first holding that the family court clearly erred by not applying the parental discipline defense for the reasons recited in the summary disposition?
Yes, Your Honor. It is the state's position that the trial court was correct in finding that the parental discipline defense did not apply in this case.
Are you arguing that the ICA erred with respect to that holding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why didn't you apply for cert?
I apologize, Your Honor. I misspoke. if the court were to hold, were to uphold the Intermediate Court of Appeals finding that the parental discipline defense did apply and the ICA was correct, then it's the state's position that we did disprove the parental discipline defense at trial.
So for purposes of this proceeding, do you agree that we are assuming as a given that the family court erred in ruling as a matter of law that the parental discipline defense was inapplicable?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. I think as far as looking at the behavior of the child in this case and applying it in the context of the parental discipline defense, what did this child do? What was the misconduct? Essentially, it's the state's position that the child did as requested. The child did grate the cheese, however, not as Mr. Roman requested that he do it. If that's considered misconduct, you have to look now at what Mr. Roman did to Joseph to correct this supposed misbehavior, and that's where it's in a, that is where the parental discipline defense comes into effect, and yet at the same time, that is where the state disproved it because Mr. Roman went beyond what is considered discipline.
So broadly speaking, I take it it's your position that if the family court erred in ruling as a matter of law that the parental discipline defense was inapplicable, that error was harmless.
I'm sorry, Judge, can you please repeat that?
Is it your position then that the family court's error in ruling the parental discipline defense inapplicable, harmless?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
And what's the test for harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt?
Your Honor, the test is, excuse me, just 1 minute. As far as harmlessness, Judge, is does it affect a substantial right of the defendant, I believe. And here,
how about, is there any reasonable possibility that the error could have affected the outcome?
Yes, in this case, no.
Ms. Holliker, didn't the judge disallow evidence that the defendant wanted to present that would justify the parental discipline defense? Or
no, Judge, that's not the state's position. I believe what the court disallowed was prior instances of discipline as far as between Mr. Roman and Joseph. And what was clear from the transcript is that Mr. Roman testified, I have never disciplined Joseph before. And the defense at that point tried to say, okay, well, we'd like to bring in instances of non-physical discipline, which Mr. Roman did in the past. There's no case law or statute that says that a parent must bring forward evidence first that non-physical discipline was attempted, didn't succeed, so you move on to physical. That is something I think that...
Is it your view that there was no relevance to that evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, there is no relevance to that evidence for this case.
There was no relevance with respect to the issue of necessity or proportionality?
No, there is. Proportionality is at issue here.
The evidence in question of past attempts at non-corporal punishment child rearing has no relevance with respect to the reasonableness analysis and the proportionality analysis?
As far as what occurred?
Yes.
In the past?
No. In terms of what of the events that gave rise to the prosecution?
Yes. It's not relevant. That's the state's position.
Is it relevant to a showing since Roman was not the father to indicate that this was a person who had taken on the responsibility of being a, quote, parent? The only evidence of a non-physical discipline was taking him to therapy.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, I mean, is there anything else that we're talking about non-physical?
Not in the record, Your Honor. As far as the defense presenting it at trial, they did try to present that he was, and the court took notice, he is in therapy. What that therapy was about is not in the record.
But it was relevant to the showing that this was a person, Roman, who had taken on the responsibility of being a pseudo-parent.
The record is clear that Joseph was living with Mr. Powell in his house. Mr. Powell was dating, Mr. Roman was dating Joseph Powell's mother. Mr. Roman testified that he treated Joseph as a son. However, Joseph's testimony was he was dating my mother. Was Mr. Roman in a position, in a fatherly position? Perhaps. What's also clear from the record, though, is that Joseph's mother did not discipline him in the manner which Mr. Roman did. Joseph testified that when he misbehaved, his mother spanked him on his bottom. Is that appropriate for a 17-year-old boy, young man? It's up to the parent, I suppose. She is the parent. What's also clear from the record is she came in the room and had to remove Mr. Roman off of her son. In so doing, she was hit. What is clear here is
was
that...
Was he prosecuted for that assault?
No, Your Honor. It was not part of the, case. And to my knowledge, no, he was not prosecuted separately.
Any description of what the assault consisted of? I mean, was he just...
No, Your Honor. I believe the police investigation, when the police first responded to Mr. Roman and Joseph Powell's home that evening, it actually turned out to be a miscellaneous public bulletin was issued. No report was taken. Joseph had already left the house. It wasn't until Joseph reached his biological father's house that his biological father's girlfriend called the police. The police came down and took the report. Whether or not they investigated further as to what happened to Joseph's mother, it's not clear. I don't believe they investigated that. But
you agree that the defense in raising the parental use of force defense must show that the force used on the particular occasion is reasonably related to the purpose of safeguarding the welfare of the minor, including punishment of the minor's misconduct.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the question of what force is used or if force itself is appropriate or reasonable under the circumstances would reasonably include the past experience between whoever administered the punishment and the child.
Under certain circumstances, yes.
So if in a particular circumstance, all kinds of non-physical punishment was administered but proved unsuccessful, then would it be relevant to the defense to show that all of these prior non-physical types of punishment had failed?
It may be.
And in the construct of at least our law, where the defense is entitled to present evidence of a defense, no matter how inconclusive, weak, etc., the evidence may be, then would the defendant in this case be justified in producing evidence that all kinds of non-physical punishment had failed in the past, and that's why on this occasion he chose to use physical punishment?
No, not under the facts and circumstances of this case and the incident that happened here.
What facts and circumstances do we have?
Well, the facts are that Joseph was requested by Mr. Roman to grate cheese, which he was apparently asked to do
twice. Are you about to argue the inapplicability of the parental discipline defense as a matter of law?
No, Judge. What I'm trying to get at is what are the circumstances in which the parental discipline defense, if brought into evidence in this case, which in a sense was by the defendant's own testimony, what was it? So if we take Mr. Roman's testimony that he asked Joseph to grate this cheese and shred the lettuce and Joseph didn't do it, taking his argument, what is his discipline? What did he do to this child, young man? He leaves the residence for about an hour, and he returns. And at this point, Joseph is laying down on the ground with his back facing Mr. Roman. He has a Walkman on. Mr. Roman comes up from behind and kicks him twice in the back. Mr. Roman's own testimony was, I kicked him in his ocole to get his attention. At this point, Joseph stands up. And Mr. Roman testified he was defiant. He had his hands clenched. Joseph doesn't know who's kicking him from behind. And at that point when he stood up, that's when Mr. Roman said, go ahead, hit me. And this direction that we're headed with the defendant, this isn't punishment. Kicking a child, you know, tapping him and saying, I want to talk to you. Face me. Look at me. He slaps him then twice across the face, causing a bump. So it was hard enough to cause a bump and redness to the face. And then he places his hands on his neck. And Joseph testified to being choked. We have left the realm of punishment here. We're trying to bring this child's behavior back into what the defendant, Mr. Roman, wanted. At that point, it's no longer reasonably related to what Joseph did, what was wrong with his behavior. Not only is it not reasonably related, but it could create a risk of substantial bodily injury. So those two prongs, it's the state's position, the state negated the parental discipline defense at trial. And by his own testimony, he brought in why he did this. I kicked him. I slapped him. I called the police. I told them to come and get me.
What was the evidence concerning self-defense? I mean, was self-defense a defense raised by the defendant?
No, not at trial, Judge. If I remember correctly, there were issues as to Joseph's misbehavior at school, and the court took in in-camera inspection his school records, and the defense had tried to say, well, because of how he acted at school, that's why Mr. Roman was reacting this way, and the court said, I've reviewed the records, I don't find it applicable.
Okay, well, as far as the relative size, I mean, if you refer to the minor as being 17 years old, if he was a 250-pound 17-year-old, and nothing indicates his size, right? I mean, is that significant evidence to consider in these cases where you're trying to assess the proportionality of the punishment? I mean, if you were to kick someone that's 200 pounds in the way Roman supposedly kicked him, in terms of looking at what kind of injury or what kind of testimony was given by the minor that he just hurt a little bit, or, you know, is that your burden to show evidence of this nature that this was excessive in regards to size, age, and so forth?
I apologize to the court that the record doesn't speak to the size of either the defendant or Joseph.
That's somewhat important.
I think the court, the family court, did in its ruling characterize the defendant as a big guy.
Yes, and I can say I was at the trial. I saw both parties. I apologize again that it's not, hindsight is 20/20. It's not in the record. Does size matter? Maybe under certain circumstances. However, in this circumstance, we have kicking twice in the back.
To what extent did it cause injury? The kind of injury that's described in the statute. You know, if it's a injuries that's causing some disablement, going to the hospital, open wound, that's the kind of thing we're looking at, right?
Well, Your Honor, it's
excessiveness. And if we don't know the size of the guy, Roman being a big guy, well, what about the 17-year-old? Is he a big guy? Can he withstand a kick to the butt to get his attention? It wasn't described as a kick like a karate kick or a kung fu kick that threw him against the wall.
I understand, Your Honor. And it's the state's position that we're not looking at what necessarily, what injury was caused, what injury could have been caused, because the statute says create a risk of substantial bodily injury. Right. So kicking somebody in the back, regardless of size, could cause injury to internal organs. Yeah. Not only
depending on the nature of the kick.
Yes.
You know,
but
a defiok, and contact between foot and back or foot and ocoli is a kick. But, I mean, the record's relatively silent regarding the severity of the kick, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I understand that. But also looking at choking, regardless of size, choking was also...
What was the description of the choking? There were little marks on his neck or something.
There were scratches on his neck.
Did he say he was losing... he couldn't breathe or... pain there in his neck, or what was the evidence?
The only testimony that we have is Joseph saying that he was choked, which, again, is it's something to be considered, though, Judge, because actually with choking, we don't necessarily always have outside injuries that we can see. The injuries occur on the inside of the body. So to go by, well, we need to see bruises, we need to see this, it doesn't happen in every case. I think what needs to be focused upon is what were the actions of Mr. Roman? What did he do to Joseph? And with regard to the misconduct and then the discipline, the physical discipline, kicking, choking, that's not punishment. Perhaps slapping across the face could be punishment. That's what happened in Stalker. But again, it was one slap. And this is... after the boy wouldn't come several times, right? But looking at the injuries, soreness to the back, a lump on the cheek, scratch marks on the neck, the defendant's own testimony, this, you know, he challenged that child to a fight. That is not punishment anymore. That is not a parent. That is two people at a bar. That scenario. Where is this kicking safeguarding this child? Where is the choking safeguarding this child? How is that conduct on the part of Mr. Roman trying to change the conduct of Joseph?
Well, to put your comments in context, Roman testified that he told Joseph to grate the cheese before he left, and that when he came back, Joseph hadn't done it or hadn't done it the way he asked him to. And when he approached Joseph, Joseph was lying on the sofa with a Walkman on his head and stared at Roman, and Roman couldn't couldn't get his attention, that's why he kicked him in his butt. I didn't see back in the evidence. It says kicked him in his buttocks.
That would be Mr. Roman's testimony. Joseph's testimony was that he was kicked twice in the back. He was not facing the defendant when the defendant approached him. So, and Mr. Roman's own testimony was, I kicked him to get his attention.
Right, because he testified. Joseph was lying on the sofa with his Walkman on, stared at him, and didn't answer.
Okay. What I remember the testimony was is that he referred to Joseph staring at him defiantly when he stood up. I don't believe that Joseph's testimony was he wasn't facing the defendant when he was kicked. And even if going by defendant's testimony, I kicked him in the occole, Joseph could not have been facing him at that point.
The legislature, in its wisdom, has characterized discipline as a subset of safeguarding, has it not?
That's correct.
All right. The kick to the occole or back was discipline, was it not? Justified or otherwise?
No, it's the state's position that the kick to the back could not be discipline. It's even the defendant's own testimony was, I did it to get his attention.
I did it to get his attention because he was lying on the floor couch like a vegetable an hour after I'd asked him to help me prepare his mother's Mother's Day dinner. I wanted to get his attention. That's not discipline?
No, Judge, I respectfully disagree. I don't think that can be seen as discipline. Tapping him on the shoulder and saying, I want to talk to you, turn around, I need your attention, it's not clear that this facing the wall or not facing the defendant when the defendant approaches you is not misbehavior in the sense that I'm going to kick you to get your attention. I'm going to kick you because you're not looking at me.
So that conduct could not even be construed as unjustified discipline. Because it wasn't discipline at all. Is that what you're saying?
That's the state's position, yes, as far as the kicking is concerned. And it wasn't, if you take Joseph's testimony, it wasn't a kick in the occole, it was two kicks to the back. So you don't have a chance to even respond.
Well, back the complainant's use of that term is somewhat ambiguous, isn't it? All we know it was that it was to the posterior part of his body as opposed to the dorsal, if that's the opposite.
Yes, it was. Joseph's testimony was it was to his back, his lower back.
In other Supreme Court cases dealing with parental discipline, you know that there are cases where the injuries were so much more severe. The force used was so much more severe than this. Lasting bruises, bumps lasting for weeks. How long did the lump on his cheek or the redness on his cheek last? How long did the pain to his back last?
Your Honor, I believe he was sore. The testimony, I believe, was at least a day. His back was sore. The lump to the cheek and the redness, but.
Well, the lump. I mean, that's a question as to whether there was a lump. The police said it was just redness, and his complexion is kind of reddish.
Right.
He said.
And Joseph and his brother both testified that there was a lump to his face. Again, Your Honor, it's the state's position that I understand that there are cases that have come before this court where the injuries are more severe, but that is not, the state is not required to prove that these injuries are so severe. And it's not, the statute says it's, you could cause these injuries and then this defense doesn't apply, or you could create a risk of causing these injuries and then this defense doesn't apply. That's what the state's position is as far as this case. You created a risk of these injuries.
By your definition, any kind of physical punishment might create a risk of these injuries.
It depends on where is the child hit? What is the child hit with? What is the possibility?
The police officer said there was no bruising or swelling 4 hours after the incident.
Sometimes bruising and swelling doesn't appear until the following day, 24 hours after. Sometimes it appears 1 hour after.
Well, there was bruising and swelling, according to Joseph, after the incident. But the police officers say 4 hours after that, there was no bruising or swelling.
I believe the police officer testified there was redness to his face, though. But again, you know, redness, perhaps he has a ruddy complexion. But I think the difference, too, is that Joseph's brother, Gerald, who sees him, saw an injury on his face. This officer who responded to the scene most likely has never met Joseph before. So he's making a viewing of this person that he doesn't know if there's, if he, what it is that Joseph himself is testifying to. Yes, I had a lump on my face. Yes, my back was sore. It's the state's position in this case that the state did disprove the parental discipline defense as far as prongs 3 and 4 of that defense. The state is only required to negate one prong. Here, the state is arguing that the reasonableness of the conduct of Mr. Roman and the misconduct of Joseph is not related, that the defendant's actions were not safeguarding Joseph, and that as far as prong 4, the actions of Mr. Roman could create a risk of substantial bodily injury, specifically the kicking him in his back and the choking of Joseph. Based on that information and the facts presented to this court through the trial transcript, the state would request that the court affirm the defendant's conviction for abusing Joseph. Thank you.
Very briefly, a couple of points. There is, in fact, no evidence of choking in the record. Joseph did not testify to his choking. In fact, the judge on page 19 of the transcript states, the court's recollection is that the court paused. The witness was asked about choking, and he didn't remember. So that's that. That's the end of the matter. And that's on page 19 of the transcript. And so, and likewise, in the court's final findings, the court did not find, did find that a hand was placed on Joseph's neck, but there was no finding in terms of choking. So with regard to that issue, I'm not sure if I misspoke earlier with regard to, I believe the trial attorney, the deputy public defender at trial, at one point did not argue self-defense in her closing, but it does appear that she was trying to bring out self-defense in terms of Joseph's prior inclination for violence, as well as what can be seen as the offer of proof from what the doctor would have testified to. So certainly, as part of the court's shutting down of the evidence, it certainly precluded the defense's offering of making that defense as well. Thank you.
The court will take this matter under advisement.